next time on From Albion and Beyond. Recent acquisitions, North American radio debuts, and brand new releases, including tracks from Anglo-Irish supergroup Fluke. From Albion and Beyond, Saturday, 8 p.m. on KUAR FM 89.
This is 89.1 KUAR, Little Rock. News and culture for Arkansas. KUAR is a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas at Little Rock.
All right, Saturday night, not necessarily Nashville. I'm Michael Heplin, sitting in for Flap Jones this week. Thank you for tuning in. Hope you're staying cool. Definitely a hot one out there right now. See, 88 degrees. At least the heat index has finally dropped below 100. Heat index, it only feels like 98. So, I've been talking about the Johnny Cash House up in Dyess, Arkansas. And this really is a treasure. Ruth Hawkins talks about this during the interview, but for a long time it looked like the Johnny Cash House was not going to make it. It was in rough shape, and it really wasn't until Arkansas State University was convinced to make it part of this program, Arkansas Heritage Sites Program. And that's when the ball started rolling, and you had a lot of important people, Roseanne Cash in particular, really get involved and say that, yeah, this really was an important place for Johnny Cash. And I won't talk too much here. I'll let the interview speak for itself. But this is Dr. Ruth Hawkins. She oversees ASU's Arkansas Heritage Sites program, and she's really been the one who has made this happen. If you're a longtime listener of the program, other times when I've filled in for Flap, I've often interviewed her in advance of events that were going to be happening. She's retiring on June 30th, and I think she's done a lot more, but I think just her work with the Johnny Cash House really is an incredible legacy that she can be proud of. So she was interviewed here by our partner station, KASU, up in Jonesboro. Jonathan Reeves spoke with her on several topics, but I wanted to play this segment here, talking with her just about what it has taken to help lead to the restoration of Johnny Cash's boyhood home. He and his family moved in there 1935 when he was 3 years old. He often talked about it. He included songs about his time there. So, Dr. Ruth Hawkins, thank you for all of your service. This is KUAR 89.1, and here's Jonathan Reeves with KASU.
How did you all get started with the Johnny Cash Project?
Well, that's interesting. You know, I'm retiring June 30th, but I've been saying I was retiring for years and years, and I was going to retire shortly after we finished the Lakeport Plantation and opened the Lakeport Plantation. I had planned to retire, but the university was celebrating its 100th birthday in 2009, 2010. And I remember when I chaired the university's 75th anniversary, I said, I pity the poor fool that gets stuck with doing the 100th because it's a lot of work. And so lo and behold, I wound up being that poor fool. So I chaired that and I said, okay, but now the minute we have the last activity, I'm retiring. So we finished the last activity, and by that time, the legislature introduced Kirkley Thomas and Carmi Henry, who were two officials with the Arkansas Electric Cooperative, were very interested in Johnny Cash and in doing something in Dyess with Johnny Cash. And they came and talked with me to see if the university would be interested in taking this on. And I said, no, we can't take it on. you know, I'm retiring and we've got too much on our plate, and so we just can't really take it on. And they went to the legislator in that for Mississippi County, and Steve Briles, the senator there at the time, and Steve introduced a bill in the legislature directing giving $50,000 to Arkansas State University to conduct a feasibility study on whether or not this DICE project should become one of Arkansas State University's heritage sites. So, of course, we were directed by the legislature to do this study, and naturally the study concluded that, yes, this really needs to be preserved as a heritage site. And so I was asked, you know, would you agree to stay on and do this instead of retiring? And, of course, I said yes, because that had always been, that site had always been a real concern of mine, because, as you know, I spent a lot of time driving around through the Delta and working with people in the Delta, so I knew and I saw some of the things that were going on in each of the communities. And one of the things in DICE is that people were driving by this site, even though it was privately owned at the time. People were driving by and they were stopping and they were taking pictures and they were saying, "Oh, that's where Johnny Cash grew up. Look how he grew up." Well, the house was dilapidated and it was sinking into the ground. It was sagging in the middle. It was almost on its last leg. And it really bothered me that people were saying, "Oh, this is how Johnny Cash lived," because he didn't live like that. When he and his family moved there, it was a brand new colony home that had been provided by the federal government as part of the agricultural resettlement program. And so it was so new that when the family moved in, Johnny Cash used to talk about how his mother sat down on the floor and cried because it was the first new house that she'd ever lived in. And there were still like 5 empty cans of paint sitting on the floor from when they had just finished painting the shutters outside and right. and painting the flower boxes. So it was brand new. And I hated for people to go by and see this dilapidated house and say, "Oh, that's how Johnny Cash grew up. Isn't that terrible?" And it wasn't. So I really wanted the opportunity to bring that house back to life. And it's kind of interesting now because a lot of people say, "Oh, that's not how it looked. Arkansas State University has made it look too new, you know, and they didn't live like that." Well, you know, the truth of the matter is the people that are around today, they do remember it looking kind of run down and decrepit. They don't remember it from the days when the Cash family first moved in and it was brand new. So we have to tell people, yeah, this is what it looked like when the Cash family moved there.
I'm talking with Dr. Ruth Hawkins, who's Executive Director of Arkansas Delta Byways and also is the Director of the Arkansas State University Heritage Sites. So let's talk about that. When they moved, that was during the time of the New Deal. Is that right?
Right.
Can you kind of take us back as to, you know, the purposes of the New Deal and you know, those homes that were set up around that area, please?
Okay. Well, obviously, there were lots and lots of New Deal programs, but one of the groups in this country that was really hurt badly by the Great Depression were the farmers, because they had had double and triple whammies. They had, a lot of farmers had been wiped out by the flood of 1927. And if they managed to survive the flood of 1927, then chances are their crops burned up during the drought in 1930-31, when many of the people lost their farms because, as I said, the crops, you know, there was no rain for days and days and days, and crops burned in the fields. And then if they manage to survive the flood one year and the drought the next year, then chances are many of them lost their farms because the banks all started failing in the early 30s after the stock market crash in 29. Then that pretty much led later to the banks all failing, which meant that farmers couldn't get a bank loan to plant their crops. So you had all of these out-of-work farmers. And the government decided that they needed to do something. And so they established an agricultural resettlement program. And W.R. Dice, who was the Works Progress Administrator and the Federal Emergency Relief Administrator for Arkansas, he owned property in Mississippi County. And he got the idea there had been other resettlement colonies, but they were more like they took, for instance, they took people that were out of work, mine workers, and they put them all in a community and gave them jobs in factories or that kind of thing. Or they may give people property in a town with a plot that was big enough to grow their own garden or that kind of thing. But W.R. Dice came up with the idea of doing an agricultural colony where each farmer was settled on 20 or so acres and not only was raising enough money for his own family, to feed his own family, but that hopefully could start earning an income that would enable him eventually to pay the government back for all that the government had advanced. And so he proposed to President Roosevelt and his administration that a colony be established at Dice. It was one of the earliest. It was established in 1934. The earliest colonies were established in 1934, so I don't know which one came first, but right. But it was the biggest colony in the country. They took 16,000 acres of land, which the government purchased in Mississippi County at very good rates, divided it into 520-acre farmsteads, and then they recruited farm families from all over Arkansas that were out of work. And you couldn't be just anybody. You had to be recommended by the extension agent in your county. You had to go through a rigorous evaluation program that you had to demonstrate that you had been a successful farmer and had been successful before the Depression. You had to demonstrate that you were in good enough health that you could clear this land that the government was advancing to you and that your family was were good citizens and of high moral character, that your kids didn't fight in school, that you didn't have extreme religious and political views, you know, all of these things that today you probably couldn't be asked on an application, but
right. But
they ask all of these things, and then they selected based on that. And so the Cash family was one of these 500 families that was selected to participate in this program. So they arrived in Dice in March of 1935, just a few months after it had gotten started. And they had five children that they arrived there with. Johnny was 3 years old at the time. They had two other children once they arrived there. But they were one of these farm families. And so Johnny Cash grew up like every other colony family. And was obviously greatly impacted by growing up in the Dice Colony. Many of his songs are directly about experiences, like 5 Feet High and Rising is about the 1937 flood that caused them to evacuate the Dice Colony for a while. Pickin' Time is about the hardships of picking cotton. There were songs like I'm Busted and Look at Them Beans and Christmas as I Knew It and, you know, all these songs that were directly about his experiences. But then also so many of his values were shaped by growing up in Dice. His love of family, his, you know, concern for the downtrodden. There's been a lot said about his concern for Native Americans and for prisoners, prison reform. But all of these were values that were shaped because of the way he lived and grew up in the Dice Colony.
Dr. Ruth Hawkins is a director of Arkansas State University's Heritage Sites and also is the executive director of Arkansas Delta Byways. So tell us about when you worked on that project. Kind of tell us about how you started. And you said the house was in bad shape, and so obviously had to restore the house. And kind of tell us about how that project came along.
Well, we first acquired the city. In addition to the houses, the 500 houses, the government built a kind of a federal complex. There was what they called the Colony Circle, and that had an administration building. It had a commissary where people, you know, bought all of their supplies and then paid the government back once their crops came in. It had a movie theater. It had several buildings in the Colony Circle. And the city gave us, donated to us, and this was the first part of the project. They donated the administration building to us along with what was left of the theater and the pop shop, which was really only the front facade. I mean, we literally had to prop up the front facade with 2x4s for several years until we could get grant money to restore that. Mm-hmm. But we were working on the idea of making the administration building a museum that would focus on exhibits on what the Dice Colony was all about, how people lived, how growing up there influenced Johnny Cash and his family. At that time, we did not own the Johnny Cash Boyhood Home because it was still in private hands. But we knew that if we were going to make anything of this colony and of this administration building, that we really needed to have the house as well. And so the Cash family, particularly Roseanne Cash and John Carter Cash, they jumped in and agreed that if we would take on the house, they would help raise the money to buy the house from the owner and some of the money to restore the house. And so they started the series of annual Johnny Cash. It was called Johnny Cash Music Festival, and it was held in the Convocation Center for 4 years. Then once we opened everything, we moved it over to Dice, and we changed it to the Johnny Cash Heritage Festival instead of just Music Festival. Mm-hmm. But the Cash family helped us through these festivals. We raised every bit of the money that was required to acquire and restore the house. And it was a major project, even though the house is small. The town of Dice it's all made up of gumbo soil, which is a clay content soil that when it's wet, it gets sticky. It's like tar. It sticks to your feet. When it's dry, it cracks wide open. I mean, such wide cracks that the locals tell me that you could have a mule that would break his leg in one of those cracks if he stepped in it. Mm-hmm. So the result is that gumbo soil expands and contracts all the time. And as a result, all the houses in Dice are unlevel. They all sag in the middle, or they're dragging along the ground. You can drive down the main street in Dice, the highway going into Dice, and one day you'll see the telephone poles leaning one direction, and the next day they'll be leaning the other direction just because they move and shift. And we knew that would be a continuing problem at the Johnny Cash Boyhood Home if we didn't do something to address that. So the very first thing we did, we took the GPS points of exactly where the house was located, and then we picked it up and moved it to the back of the lot and dug a pit 8 feet deep, the whole perimeter of the house, dug a pit, took all of the gumbo soil out, that whole 8 feet of soil. We repacked it with a better draining soil and then put a 2 foot wide concrete foundation around the perimeter of the house and covered that with dirt because that was not original, and we didn't want people to be able to see that concrete foundation. But underneath the dirt, we put this 2-foot-wide concrete foundation. And then the colony houses actually set on what concrete piers that were made there in the colony, you know, kind of the triangular type pyramidal, whatever you call them, but they're concrete piers, and the house set on those piers. And so we then set those piers on top of the concrete foundation. So they look like they're sitting on the dirt, on the earth, but they're really sitting on a hidden concrete foundation. And once we had all of that in place, then we picked the house back up and we set it back in its original location. And so I literally tell people that most of the restoration money for that house was sunk into the ground because that's really what we had to do. The rest of the restoration wasn't all that difficult. I guess the most difficult thing is that the Cash family had never painted the inside of the house. It was wood, lumber that was milled right there on site, and all the houses were built with that lumber. And so when the successive owners painted it after the Cash family left, they never treated that. They never put any kind of a coat on it to undercoat on it. And so the result was that paint had really kind of gotten into all the cracks and crevices of this wood, and trying to get all of that paint off the walls and out of the wood
right.
was really probably the most difficult process.
I'm talking with Dr. Ruth Hawkins, who's executive director of Arkansas Delta Byways and also is the director of the Arkansas State University Heritage Sites. The Cash family, I guess, was obviously instrumental because they obviously they lived in the home.
Yeah, so then Johnny has two living siblings, Joanne mm-hmm. Cash and Tommy Cash. And both Joanne and Tommy, those are the other two children that were actually born in the house, and they grew up there. And they both have phenomenal memories, and they remembered everything that was in that house. They remember where things sat. And so they served as our consultants for the project and came periodically, usually every quarter, maybe more often than that. And they would walk through the house and advise us. And it was really kind of an interesting process that we used to furnish the house, because we first did a walkthrough. Tommy and Joanne would say, okay, the piano set there, and Mama always kept a lace runner on top of the piano, and she had a coal oil lamp here, and she always had a vase of flowers, and the vase of flowers set here, and she had all of our school pictures in the middle. You know, they gave us those kinds of descriptions, and they described what every piece of furniture looked like. And then we came back, and we had a Center for Digital Initiatives here at the time, and we did a virtual model of the house. We did virtual models of all the furniture, and we put the furniture in the right places in the house, and we would send it to Tommy and Joanne for them to critique it. And they would say, yes, that looks like our sofa, but it was a little more navy blue than royal blue. You've got it a little too blue. And yeah, that's kind of what our stove looked like, but our potbelly stove was a little more rounded than that one. And so then once we had everything exactly the way they remembered it, we created a registry online, kind of like a bridal registry or mm-hmm. for a baby shower, and we put pictures of what we needed and how many of each we needed. Like, we need 8 coal oil lamps, and here's what the coal oil lamps look like, and we need 10 quilts, and we need, you know, whatever. We need this kind of ice box, and we need this kind of stove, and we need this quilt frame. And so people could go online, and if they had something like that from the 30s and 40s, that they wanted to donate, they were able to do so. And then if they donated a coal oil lamp, then it automatically reduced the number we needed. And so people could go online at any time and see what we needed and what we'd already received and what we still needed. And so it was a great process because it enabled people from all over the country to be involved in providing things for the house. And, you know, they say that beggars can't be choosers, but we really were, because if somebody wanted to donate something that hadn't been described to us by Tommy and Joanne, we'd send a picture of it to them and say, hey, you didn't mention this, but did you have something like this in your house? And they'd say, no, we didn't have that. And we'd say, no, I'm sorry, we can't accept that. Or they might give us a coal oil lamp, but it might not be like the ones that they had.
Right.
So we were very careful to make sure. Now, there are some things in the house that were original that we were able to find, like the piano is original. The piano had survived because Mrs. Cash had donated it to the church mm-hmm. in Dice, and then the church at one point had given it to the community center, and it was still in one of the back rooms of the community center. So we were able to get that back. And several other things, small items that we were able to get back. But everything in that house now is either original or it's something from that period that was identical to what they had in the house.
That's fascinating.
It was a fascinating process. I loved it.
Now, of course you did. I'm talking with Dr. Ruth Hawkins, who's executive director of Arkansas Delta Byways and also is the director of the Arkansas State University Heritage Sites. So I understand that the Cash family is not one that is going to just jump at every kind of a project, you know, that's out there that, you know, if you have like a Johnny Cash thing or whatever. So I know obviously this was special to them. And how has it been working with the Cash family throughout this whole process?
Well, it's been really interesting because the Cash family has jumped in anytime we have needed anything. In fact, Roseanne was just in town this last month to go to Little Rock with us for the signing of the two bills that one involved naming September 1st as Annual Music Appreciation Day. The other to replace the two statues in the U.S. Capitol with the statues of Johnny Cash and Daisy Bates. But basically, anytime anything comes along related to the project, they are more than happy to step in and help. And Roseanne has made the point many times that she gets asked all the time to do projects related to her father, and she usually turns them down because, you know, she has her own projects for one thing.
Right.
And, you know, she doesn't want to speak for her father necessarily, but she felt like this was something that was important enough to the whole family and to the future generations of Cash family. She wanted her children to see where their grandparents and great-grandparents had lived, and Roseanne has brought all five of her children there. They've all been here and been to the house. Certainly, you know, Joanne and Tommy are constantly bringing people to the house. Joanne's kind of interesting because Joanne lives in Nashville, but sometimes she'll just show up on a Saturday and she'll go out to the house and sit on the front porch swing, and when visitors come up, she'll say, "Hi, I'm Joanne Cash. I'm Johnny Cash's baby sister, and let me show you through my house." And people, you know, are just shocked.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but they love the project and have been so generous to us.
Before you opened up that project, I know, you know, to the public, I know they got an opportunity to be able to see the final project, you know, with the house, the administration building that you all worked on, the movie theater, and all that. What was their initial thought? Take us back to that time when they walked through the house and saw it as it was when you all got through with it.
Oh, my. Well, we all had tears because they had tears. And if we show a video clip at our visitor center now that we show to all the tourists who come there. It's just a little 5-minute clip, but it shows the reactions of the various members of the Cash family the first time they walked through it. And they were just overwhelmed and sharing memories with each other. Joanne talking about telling her nieces and nephews and children and grandchildren about the quilt frame up on top and how she used to have to scrub the linoleum floor, what they call it was congoleum, which was actually a little bit different from linoleum. But, you know, just telling stories like they were back in the house. And I think Tommy Cash said something the first time he saw it that probably made it all worthwhile for all of us. He, you know, when he went through it, he looked at us and he said, "Arkansas State University has brought back the love that filled this house." And I thought, you know, what more could you say?
That's Dr. Ruth Hawkins, head of Arkansas State University's Arkansas Heritage Sites Program, speaking with Jonathan Reeves, news director of our partner station up in Jonesboro, KASU. And as was mentioned there, Dr. Hawkins is retiring here at the end of the month, but just wanted to air that and really thank her for all she's done to help restore what I think is indeed a treasure, a musical treasure that will be long appreciated. Johnny Cash, as a performer, I think he will, decades from now, still be remembered. So I thought I'd come out with that. I've got a few requests that I'll get to. But I wanted to come out from that with a live segment here from Johnny Cash, where he talks a little bit about growing up there in Dyess. This was at a concert he did 1969 at Madison Square Garden. Play three songs that, well, he'll tell you. I'll stop talking, but Johnny Cash live talking here about growing up in the flat black delta land of Arkansas. This is KUAR 89.1 and not necessarily Nashville.
At my door the leaves are falling, a cold wild wind will come. Sweethearts walk by together, and I still miss someone. I go out on a party and look for a little fun. But I find the darkened corner, 'cause I still miss someone. No, I never got over those blue eyes, I see them everywhere. I miss those arms that held me when all the love was there. I wonder if she's sorry for leaving what we'd begun. There's someone for me somewhere, and I still miss someone.
Thank you very much. It's good to be with you in New York again. Enjoy seeing our friends. Thank you. In case we haven't met before, I'd like to tell you in song a little bit about ourselves and a little bit about our background. You know, we come from the flat black delta land in Arkansas. That's one of the places we come from. And after I got into the music field and started writing and recorded and singing songs about the things I knew, I wrote a lot of songs about life as I knew it back when I was a little bitty boy. And one of the things I remember most when I was a little boy was one night, one cold winter night, the rain had been falling. The river kept rising, and all the old folks kept saying that Mississippi River's gonna break that levee. One morning, the levee broke at Wilson, Arkansas, and that black, muddy Mississippi River water come right up over the cotton patch, right up to the front door of our house. And I heard my daddy holler and ask my mama, "How high is the water, mama?" 2 feet high and rising. "How high is the water, papa?" She said, "It's 2 feet high and rising. We can make it to the road in a homemade boat. That's the only thing we got left that'll float. It's already over all the wheat and oats. 2 feet high and rising. How high is the water, mama? 3 feet high and rising. How high is the water, papa?" She said, "It's 3 feet high and rising." Well, the hives are gone, I lost my bees. Chickens are sleeping in the willow trees. Cows in water up past her knees. 3 feet high and rising. How high is the water, mama? 4 feet high and rising. How high is the water, papa? She said, "It's 4 feet high and rising." Hey, come look through the window pane. The bus is coming, gonna take us to the train. Looks like we'll be blessed with a little more rain. 4 feet high and rising. How high is the water, mama? 5 feet high and rising. How high is the water, papa? She said, "It's 5 feet high and rising." Well, the rails are washed out north of town. We gotta head for higher ground. Can't come back till the water goes down. 5 feet high and rising. Well, it's 5 feet high and rising. And ladies and gentlemen, my guest of honor here tonight is the man that, back in that cold winter of 1937, put us on the bus that took us to the train that carried us down to the hills at Pine Bluff to save us from being washed away in a flood. My 72-year-old father, Mr. Ray Cash. Well, I was 4 years old at the time, and I can't remember a lot about it, but Daddy said that we got back home, that the house was full of mud, chickens and pigs and dogs and 9 bullfrogs. Mama cleaned the house out that winter, and the next spring, Daddy and my older brother Roy cleared a lot more cotton land, and the cotton grew tall in 1938. We got a crop that was fair to middling, which incidentally is a grade of cotton. I got cotton in the bottom land. It's up and growing, and I got a good stand. My good wife and them kids of mine are gonna get new shoes come picking time. Get new shoes come picking time. Every night when I go to bed, I thank the Lord that my kids are fed. They live on beans 8 days and nine. But I'll get them fat come picking time. Get them fat come picking time. It's hard to see by the Kolar light, and I turn it off pretty early at night. A jug of Kolar costs a dime. But I'll set up late come picking time. Set up late come picking time. My old wagon barely gets me to town. I patch the wheels and I watered them down. I'm gonna keep her in shape so she'll be fine. To haul my cotton come picking time. To haul my cotton come picking time.
Yeah, Johnny Cash, recorded 1969, Madison Square Garden in New York City, released in 2002. And we had Pickin' Time, 5 Feet High and Rising, and I Still Miss Someone. This year's Johnny Cash Music Festival, set for October 17th through the 19th. It's going to feature a lot of good stuff, headlining the show Roseanne Cash, Marty Stewart. There will also be an academic symposium, panel discussions, and presentations. So that really should be great. Well, I read this week, and if you're a fan of Bob Dylan, you're probably familiar with his series of releases called the Bootleg Series. Rolling Stone magazine reported this week that a source claims the next installment in this long-running series will feature recordings made by Johnny Cash and Bob Dylan. They spent quite a bit of time together and recorded a lot more material than was ever released. I'm going to play one song here, the only one I know of. This was featured on Dylan's Nashville Skyline album from 1969, and it's Girl from the North Country. So maybe we'll get some new stuff we haven't heard before. That's always exciting. You know, you may have heard about that big fire at a place where a lot of original recordings were archived out in Los Angeles. And it was heartbreaking reading about that, because you then hear about things like that live concert there from New York, or this Bob Dylan. You get these unreleased things that over the decades you realize just what gems they are, and when you can go back and find these things, it was heartbreaking to read about that fire, just the prospect of losing stuff like what, if this report is correct, will be coming out from Dylan and Johnny Cash. But anyway, here we go, Girl from the North Country. Thanks for listening. I've got some requests coming up. You're listening to Not Necessarily Nashville on 89.1 KUAR.
If you're traveling to the North Country Fair, where the winds hit heavy on the borderline, remember me to one who lives there. For she once was a true love of mine.
See for me that her hair's hanging down. It curls and falls all down her breast. See for me that her hair's hanging down. That's the way I remember her best.
If you go when the snowflakes fall, when the rivers freeze and summer ends, please see for me if she's wearing a coat so warm to keep her from the howl.
If you're traveling in the North Country Fair,
where the winds hit heavy
on the borderline, please say hello to the one who lives there. For she was once a true love of mine.
When I do, I think of you. And myself back home, where I got chores to keep me busy, a clock to keep my time, a pretty girl to love me with the same last name as mine. And when the flowers wilt, a big old quilt to keep us warm. I've got the sun to see your blue eyes, and tonight you're in my arms. Sometimes I get unwound when fancy cars drive past. Money don't get me down, but I can't make it last. I bite my nails, and if that fails, I go get myself stoned. But when I do, I think of you and head myself back home, where I got chores to keep me busy, a clock to keep my time, a pretty girl to love me with the same last name as mine. And when the flowers wilt, a big old quilt to keep us warm. I've got the sun to see your blue eyes, and tonight you're in my arms.
How do you talk to a little baby goat? You can't go meow like a cat. When you go meow to a little baby goat, he can't go meow right back. No, you have to say bad to a little baby goat. You can't say hello like a man. You have to say bad to a little baby goat. That's all he understands. How do you talk to a little baby goat? You can't go cackle like a hen. When you go cackle to a little baby goat, it doesn't mean a thing to him. So you have to say bad to a little baby goat. You can't say hello like a man. You have to say bad to a little baby goat. That's all he understands. How do you talk to a little baby goat? You can't go quack like a duck. When you go quack to a little baby goat, it just doesn't mean very much. And so you can't go meow, cackle, quack to a goat. You can't say hello like a man. You can't go meow, cackle, quack to a goat. Remember, you have to say bang.
Thank you, Tom T. Hall. How to talk to a little baby goat. Yeah, I was actually looking up how I got to Memphis, but then I saw that one and thought that would be a fun one to play. That's from his album, Country Songs for Children. I haven't really been able to get my 7-year-old daughter excited about country music, so maybe I need to break out that album on the next trip and let her enjoy that. That's great. I will play that other one from Tom T. Hall here shortly. Before that, I requested one from Jim, Graham Parsons International Submarine Band and Blue Eyes. I think that came out about 1968 or so. So thanks for listening. Only about 10 minutes left and going to get in all requests here in the remaining minutes. Let me do that other Tom T. Hall song I mentioned. Then we'll get some Flattened Scruggs and one more in. This is Not Necessarily Nashville on KUAR.
If you love somebody enough, you'll follow wherever they go. That's how I got to Memphis. That's how I got to Memphis. If you love somebody enough, you'll go where your heart wants to go. That's how I got to Memphis. That's how I got to Memphis. I know if you've seen her, you tell me, 'cause you are my friend. I've got to find her and find out the trouble she's in. If you tell me that she's not here, I'll follow the trail of her tears. That's how I got to Memphis. That's how I got to Memphis. She would get mad and she used to say that she'd come back to Memphis someday. That's how I got to Memphis. That's how I got to Memphis. I haven't eaten a bite or slept for 3 days and nights. That's how I got to Memphis. That's how I got to Memphis. I've got to find her and tell her that I love her so. I'll never rest till I find out why she had to go. Thank you for your precious time. Forgive me if I start to cry. That's how I got to Memphis. 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 That's how I got to Memphis.
Leah wanted to hear that one. Well, she maybe not that one. She requested some Earl Scruggs, and I was searching around what I had and found some Lester Flatt Earl Scruggs rolling in my sweet baby's arm. Hope you enjoyed that. Hey, we're out of time. I'm Michael Hiplin. Been sitting up here for Flap this week. She'll be back in the captain's chair next week. So thanks for listening. I've really enjoyed being up here, and it's always fun being able to get out of my element. Not necessarily do news, but do not necessarily Nashville. So I'll close out with one more song, a request for Rita, Joshua Ray Walker. He's going to be playing at Sticky's real soon. The song from a release out this year is called Trouble. This is KUAR 89.1. Thanks for listening.
I'm looking for trouble. He's an old friend of mine. I can't say that I'm missing or that he's ever been kind. If a lady goes looking, she'll find him every time. I'm looking for trouble. He's an old friend of mine. With a hefty how do ya, we go singing hallelujah. We'll go rolling round town till the whiskey runs dry. You are nowhere to be found. My body lies limp on the ground. I'm looking for trouble. She's an old friend of mine. Can't say that I miss her or that she's ever been kind. If a fella goes looking, we'll find her every time. I'm looking for trouble. She's an old friend of mine.
This is 89.1 KUAR Little Rock, a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas at Little Rock. KUAR is news and culture for Arkansas. Show your support by becoming a sustaining member at KUAR.org.